It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Yes, it is. And we had a big chat about trade and human rights and how it's easier to call out smaller countries than it is to call out our allies or big, powerful countries who are in breach of human rights. But I began by asking about the Green Party immigration policy, which is to increase our refugee quota in New Zealand to 5,000. The current government doubled the quota to 1,500 refugees, which seems quite low when there's an estimated 79.5 million people around the world who have been forced to flee their homes, and among them are nearly 26 million refugees, according to the UN Refugee Agency. So I began by asking James Shaw how he thinks a quota should be determined.
Well, this is going to sound ironic, but we actually want to match Australia. Australia brings in more refugees per capita than we do. And so what we want to do is to be able to say, actually, we should have an equivalent basis. And the idea behind, in 2017 we said we wanted to double the quota to 1,500, then we wanted to double it again. And that takes us up. But what we've said is, you know, if we can get that up to 5,000, that will actually get us within cooey of a lot of other OECD countries. 5,000 isn't a lot, you know, to tell you the truth. But our facility at Mangere, where refugees come in and kind of get acclimatized to New Zealand culture and society and so on before they join, kind of go to live in the cities, will be at capacity. So we've also said that we want to open a second refugee resettlement centre.
Mm. With immigration being quite limited due to COVID-19, do you think that refugees seeking asylum should take precedence over immigrants from other richer countries who may not need to be here, but there's an economic benefit, like they could pump money into the economy?
Well, the constraints around coming into the country at the moment apply equally to refugees and other immigrants. And that's because we are actually struggling to bring home all of the New Zealanders who are overseas and want to return home. So we've had something like 50,000 New Zealanders come back since the beginning of the COVID outbreak in February. We've got kind of constraints at the border in terms of the total volumes that we can handle at any one time. Now, at some point, the kind of wave of New Zealanders returning home will start to ebb, and that will ease the pressure on the border and mean that we can start to bring in, non-New Zealanders. And I would anticipate that a portion of those should be refugees, that we would sort of allocate, a percentage of spaces.
Mm.
But that'll all depend on capacity.
On the note of Australia, New Zealand's offered to take in refugees who were being held in Australia's offshore detention centres, such as Nauru and Manus Island, and it's common knowledge about the appalling conditions that are in these centres. What happens in these situations when we're aware of the conditions that the people seeking asylum are under, and we've offered to help, and the help has been rejected? Is there anything that can be done?
Well, I mean, we just keep making that offer to Australia, and they're very aware of it. I know the Prime Minister has raised it with the Australian Prime Minister on a number of occasions to say that offer still exists. But if they don't want to take that up, that really is over to them.
Hmm. On the note of human rights issues and international relations, New Zealand relies heavily on China for trade, but there are currently nearly 400 detention camps being built for Uyghur Muslims and reports of abuses of human rights. The New Zealand government has expressed concern over this, but I'm wondering, when it's an incredibly powerful country who we do rely on, when do situations such as these camps seriously affect international relations and trade agreements?
Well, the Green Party has said for some time that we shouldn't be doing preferential trade deals with countries that are engaged in severe human rights abuses. And, you know, unfortunately, in recent times, emboldened by, I think, the Trump administration and the kind of distraction that the US is going through as a result of that, are engaging in human rights abuses, not just with the Uyghur, but the ongoing situation in Tibet. And also they're starting to wind back a number of the freedoms that people in Hong Kong enjoyed for a while, as well as sort of more saber-rattling when it comes to Taiwan. And those things are concerning. Ultimately, New Zealand, I think, has to be able to stand and say, look, you know, to a country that we're very close to, like China, where we've got a history of, you know, good, strong relations, to be able to say, look, this is not acceptable under, you know, international human rights agreements, including those that China themselves has signed up to. The issue that you're pointing to about the dependence on trade actually extends beyond human rights. You know, we just, as a matter of economic resilience, we should never have all of our eggs in one basket. And we do have a tendency in Aotearoa, you know, when we get a deal like the China trade deal for, you know, our industry, rather than diversifying, is that they just tend to sell to one place, and then you end up, you know, overexposed to whatever happens with that country. And that is something that actually we should, as a matter of good strategy and good economics, we should actually just be trying to diversify the relationships that we've got with whom we trade.
You mentioned the United States, and another thing like that is how there was a huge public movement for the government to call out the US for their treatment of black people and the Black Lives Matter movement, and there wasn't a state response against the US. Do we need to be more critical of our global superpowers, but also our allies? Is this calling out allies, is this something that should be more regularly used, or does doing it too often disrupt the balance of us trying to get along and that sort of relationship?
Well, I think it's really important that we're even-handed. So one of the suspicions that China has about us is that, you know, we might be prepared to criticise China, but not the United States. And they will say, well, you know, why would you treat one country any differently from the other? Is that not just, you know, a racist stance? And so I think if we're going to have countries take us seriously when we critique them, then we need to be prepared to critique those with whom we have much closer relationships as well. And I think you can be a critical friend. You know, it's actually as a result of having actually quite close relationships and shared histories, that you're able to stand up and say, look, with respect, you know, as, you know, a country that's quite close to you, we think that you're doing the wrong thing here.
One of the Greens' foreign affairs policies opposes the Five Eyes spy network, which has been quite critical of China's actions. What are the reasons that the Greens oppose it?
Well, we've always been worried that New Zealand intelligence could be used by, you know, other members of that network, one in particular, in ways that don't sit well with our own stance on human rights and international law. And so the view is that actually we shouldn't be participating in something where we may be actively contributing to human rights abuses if we're not careful.
One of the Greens' policies is also to align trade agreements with climate change commitments. Would this mean changing up trading partners to favour countries who are doing well with mitigating the climate crisis, or encouraging current partners to do better?
Well, it's a bit of both. I mean, our trade agreements do come up for review every now and then, and so those older ones where, you know, climate change wasn't such a high priority at the time that the agreement was signed, when we have those reviews, we can say, well, what can we do together here on climate change? There's one that we're just starting to negotiate now called the Agreement on Climate Change, Trade and Sustainability, which is a New Zealand initiative that I'm really proud of and that's getting a lot of interest around the world, where we're trying to create a multilateral agreement on trade that specifically enhances the climate change and environmental policies that the various countries have signed up to. And so what I hope over time, and in fairly rapid time if we can get it, is that there will be a new standard for international trade agreements where we're actually able to accelerate our progress towards the Paris Agreement goals through those trade agreements.
Hmm.
And actually, when you think about it, we're only really going to be able to solve climate change by trading environmental goods and services with each other. So, for example, New Zealand doesn't make any cars, and we certainly don't make electric cars, but we're going to need a lot of electric cars over the course of the coming decades if we're to have any hope of hitting our emission standards. On the other hand, we're starting to learn how to produce high-quality food but with a very low emissions profile. And so the question is, can we trade, right? You know, I'll sell you intellectual property around how to reduce your agricultural emissions profile if you sell me some electric cars at a favourable rate, all of that kind of thing.
Well, that's all the questions I have this morning, James, but is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
There is one thing which I think is going to be a topic in the next Parliament, which is when it comes to foreign affairs and trade, and that is actually around international aid and development. And, you know, we know that COVID-19 is going to and is already starting to cause a massive kind of backsliding in all the progress that's been made on lifting people out of poverty over the course of the last several years. And so one of the things that as a country and as a planet we're going to need to deal with is around the global south debt and the extent to which we can have fair debt relief measures in the aftermath of the COVID-19 crisis. Because, you know, if you think about the hits that the New Zealand economy is taking as a result of COVID-19, that's massively exacerbated in developing countries.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.